So hello, we're here at the Elks Lodge. It's Thursday. Actually, we're recording this on September 11th. But every Thursday morning from 9 to 11 a.m., veterans gather at the Elks Lodge here in Astoria. So when we started Rogue Cell, the whole reason that we're trying to start it, one of the main things was to create community. And we've done that to a certain extent, and we're growing, and that's great. So every Thursday at 9 to 11 at the Elks Lodge here in Astoria, we have Vet Coffee, and we get together, and veterans from all different eras come out, and we have coffee. And today we have pumpkin pie and some muffins, and sometimes people bake a quiche and come in, so it's a lot of fun. So talking about community and growing, Rogue Cell is growing. We have a new team member, Sean Johnson, and he's here, and I'll let him introduce himself. I guess that's what I was doing.
Thank you, Brad and Sean. I appreciate you guys allowing me to be here and having this opportunity. Again, my name's Sean Johnson. I'm a local to Astoria, Oregon, and grew up here in a very, very respectful and very patriotic family. Grew up in the Park Service. My dad was the chief ranger for 20 years out at Fort Clatsop, and my mother worked for the longest time for the city of Astoria. So I've gotten a chance to get to know a lot of people in the community. And
yeah, your whole life you've been here, huh?
Absolutely.
When did you join the military?
I joined in 2006.
How old were you when you joined?
I was 22, 23 years old, 23.
How long were you in?
I was in for 6 years.
And then you came back here?
I came back, and I was fortunate that I hear stories about how veterans get a hard time transitioning back to civilian life and get, you know, have a difficult time finding work. Mm-hmm. Whereas I came home, I was unemployed for a couple months, and I started looking around. I wanted to get involved in law enforcement. And so I talked to several of our local offices and departments, and very shortly thereafter was hired by the city of Cannon Beach as a patrol officer.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And you also were a firefighter?
A volunteer firefighter, yes.
How long did you do that?
I've done firefighting stuff since, you know, I was even in my teens, working with the Park Service departments, and then City of Cannon Beach, as well as the City of Astoria Fire Departments.
Oh, man. So today being 9/11, and we have Vet Coffee, just happened to be today. I noticed that you brought some stuff in to talk about, and you did a really moving presentation, but can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely.
Like what you brought in and what it meant.
So for those of us listening in, today being 9/11, it's a very somber and very special day, a day of remembrance. It's a reminder of the sacrifices and how a nation could become unified. Today, I brought in a couple items. First is a book by David Halberstam. It's called Firehouse, and it's the story behind Engine 40 and Ladder 35. It's a department in downtown Manhattan along Lincoln Street, and they were one of the first responding units to the towers falling. And when I was going through my divorce, my ex-wife gave me this book, and I read it, and I couldn't put it down. It was just an incredible story regarding this department. And out of the 13 men that responded in those two rigs, only one made it home. And so I bring this book in just to share with people, but also because of one of the individuals, Michael DeOria, who was there. He's around the same age as me. He was just starting a family and a new firefighter. He was one of those that lost his life. And so being, you know, a patriot myself and loving to share stories, I reached out to some friends back east, and I was able to get my hands on a wonderful piece of history. You look at various parks throughout the United States and Idaho, or even at the DPSST Academy in Salem, they have pieces of the towers scattered all throughout the country for a memorial. Well, I was able to get my hands on a helmet that was at 9/11. Mm-hmm. And within upon that helmet, I added the leather shield in honor of Michael DeOria. And so I share that every year on 9/11, along with a bag of Reese's peanut butter cups.
What are those, man?
So the story behind the Reese's peanut butter cups is something that has now been publicly shared, and the 9/11 memorial continues to share the story of Ronald Fazio Sr. Ronald was a worker for the Aon Corporation. He was on the 99th floor of the South Tower, and he had a love of Reese's peanut butter cups. Anybody that ever knew him knew that he loved his sweets. And on that day, he took it upon himself to help his fellow co-workers and his friends to make it out of the tower alive. He held the door. And because of that selfless act, he saved so many lives, and he gave up his own. So every year on the anniversary of 9/11, I share Reese's peanut butter cups and his story with others. Basically, not only to honor him, but to also honor the other fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters that lost their lives on 9/11, not just EMS providers, but just regular people. Mm-hmm. So the story behind the Reese's peanut butter cup is several years after the fact, but volunteers and docents of 9/11 memorial continued to find these Reese's peanut butter cups at the site, and they were wondering what are these. And so years would pass, and eventually one of the docents saw a family wearing a Reese's peanut butter cup t-shirt, and they took it upon themselves to go up and ask and say, "Hey, we find these Reese's and you guys are wearing these shirts. Can you tell us your story?" And Rob Fazio, the son of Ronald Fazio Sr., he shared the story of his dad and talked about the foundation that was created, the Hold the Door Foundation, in his memory, and said that it's because of his sweet tooth and what he did that we remember him by leaving a Reese's peanut butter cup on this site. And one thing, Ronald, he never got to meet his newest granddaughter. And out of respect to Ronald and his sacrifices, the family decided to name his granddaughter Reese's Fazio. So it's a very moving and very special story. So out of my own respect and gratitude to him and everybody else, I share that story and share Reese's with everybody.
Well, I appreciate it. That's good. Yeah. That's really awesome. I
really appreciate you sharing that story with us, and happy to have you on as part of our team.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's the first episode while you're on. We're going to ask some of our veterans some questions, but before we do, I'm going to give some to you. Mm-hmm. What do you wish more people understood about veterans in rural Oregon, specifically maybe the North Coast?
Oh, my. I love that you chose that question. I was looking at your questions beforehand. I'm like, man, that's probably the toughest one on there.
Yeah.
What do I want people to recognize or know about rural veterans of Oregon, Washington, the Pacific Northwest? And I think the biggest thing that I want people to take away is not only just for Oregon in the Pacific Northwest, but that we have veterans everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's people right here, that struggle everywhere in the country, in the world. And it's not just in our big cities. It's all over. And for smaller communities, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for myself, is that I have a hard time myself being a veteran and really coming from the military, having awesome camaraderie, having a real band of brothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then coming home and going through the situations I did, I felt that there was a tremendous loss, and I didn't feel like I belonged. And something that has been really important to me is finding a brotherhood and finding a purpose. And so, you know, by chance, I saw Veterans Coffee on Thursdays and Rogue Cell, and I looked you guys up and I showed up and I discovered that, you know, I'm not one of the only ones.
I appreciate you did. I know how hard it could be. Like, all right, I'm going to go. I mean, especially with vets, like, you know, you come back and you're a little jaded. You're like, everything's kind of silly. I don't know. And then trying to go by yourself too. And like, I don't know any of those people. It took a lot to get there. So I'm glad that you did it.
And one of the biggest messages, and I think you really hone in on it on your documentary too, is that you're not alone.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. And that's what I think is one of the biggest messages, is to remind veterans and just people in general that if you're struggling, remember you're not alone. And everybody has a battle. They're going through a different trial, a different tribulation, but you're not alone. And there are people that want to support and help you out. And so that's my message to everybody, is don't be bullheaded like I was and just say you don't want to get the help. There are people that want to help.
Yeah, you just have to be willing to do it. Sometimes that's a really difficult thing to do, but just treat it like any other mission, you know, and get it accomplished.
Absolutely.
This is absolutely fantastic. I think we could talk with you all day, John and John. But we're going to turn this over and try to get some other.
Yeah, well, we're going to try Sean out as his radio personality first day. We're
throwing him right under the bus. This is he didn't know this, but he's going to help host today.
Yeah. So let me go get Bernice. I think we could start with her.
We can start with anyone.
So we're here with Bernice Moore, who is a veteran.
Hello.
And I wanted to say something about female veterans, but I don't want it to be like, because I know working at being the commander for the American Legion, we had a lot of women in there. And every time a woman would come in, they would say, "Oh, your husband served?" Yeah, I'm sure you got a lot of that over the years, huh? But
not so much. I think for
you probably don't even say you're a veteran. People won't even assume. Huh?
People don't assume. And I kind of came more out as a veteran maybe 15 years ago. But I had kind of a different experience in the Marine Corps.
Well, that's with okay, so
we have a fantastic episode we did with Bernice.
Yeah.
About mindfulness.
And you can find that on our blog page. Mm-hmm.
So what branch did you serve in and when?
I served in the Marine Corps during the Vietnam War from 67 to 69. And I come from a military family. I'm a Gold Star family. My brother was killed in Vietnam and went into the Marine Corps to serve the way the men in my family had served.
Yeah, you must have felt a lot of duty and maybe some obligation, I guess, to have your brother die in the war and then join the Marines.
Yeah, and it was coming from an Army family. It was kind of against the service that my family had done. A lot of West Pointers in my family.
Oh, wow.
So I went against the grain, which I'm known for. But it's like for me, I just, and I don't know if you edit this out, if it's just for me, I just got disability for my time.
Just now?
Just now. I just got it this week.
Good for you. For
military sexual trauma that I experienced. So my experience in Marine Corps was mixed, coming in with the dedication of my family and the heritage that I came from.
Yeah, you came in like okay, so my family served, I'm coming in, I'm doing my part, and then you're met with military sexual trauma. That's horrible.
It was difficult. Yeah, it's difficult. And for many years, I mean, that's like when I found mindfulness, it really helped as part of my healing. And finally, after all these years, to be acknowledged for the trauma, what it caused in my life, it's kind of stunning.
We've been hearing a similar story from some of the female veterans that we interviewed for the documentary.
It's for me, it's like I used to work at Clatsop Community Action, which is a local mm-hmm. organization mm-hmm. that prevents homelessness. Very one of the better agencies.
And they also have the VSO, the Veteran Service Officer.
I used to work in a program called Support Services for Veteran Families, SSBF, which helps homeless veterans find housing. So it kind of worked with that. And in that work, there were three, you know, I keep thinking of these three people that experienced MST, military sexual trauma, in their service. And only one of them came out as a whole person. The other two probably have difficulties most of their lives. And so I'm grateful to be sitting here with you folks that I admire and respect. And
well, that goes into our second question, which should seem like on the surface is probably an easy question, but with knowing the military sexual trauma that that happens, I mean, what does your time in service mean to you now?
It's hard to frame it in a way. It's like mm-hmm. I was really I operated mainframes and paid people, and I felt good about that honorable service, right? That I felt like it was a good thing to do during the war that has a very mixed, you know, history in this country, and the opposition to the war was very strong. But I felt like it was good work paying people and operating mainframes. I learned a lot, worked with great people. And I think for me, it took a long time to understand the MST and how that affected me, and to be able to frame it as, oh, the woman I was when I went into the Marine Corps is not the same person that I was when I came out. And I feel very grateful that I could keep my life together.
Yeah.
I had a lot of PTSD and a lot of difficulty that I worked very hard to overcome. And the mindfulness was really important part of that.
So when did you get out?
In 69. And so the war in Vietnam is full-fledged, right?
So you have to deal with the social economics or the political aspects of this war, but also on top of that, the military sexual trauma.
And the death of my brother.
On the death of your brother in the war.
And my brother-in-law, my brother's dear friend, was nearly killed. So they were very active combat veterans during Vietnam. And my brother's death and the MST and coming out. And I went to college and they shut down the colleges, right? Just because of the opposition to the war. So it was a traumatic time. So I'm grateful to be sitting here as whole as I am.
Well, now we're going into it. I was going to say, like, compare it to another traumatic time we're going through now.
Yeah, very crazy. Difficult time now.
Grateful to have you here with us, too.
Yeah.
So when we ask this question, it's usually for veterans who had got out, more recently. But so throughout the time that you've been out, how has the community supported or challenged your journey since getting there, leaving the military?
Well, I think not so much support. I think for me, because I hid being in the Marine Corps for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I hear that from a lot of Vietnam vets. Some of them, here even at the coffee, they're like, well, I didn't just never said I was a veteran anymore.
Yeah, because it's like for me in protests when I was at the University of California, it's like trying to participate and they hated us. I mean, especially the Marines, right?
So you're as a Marine who, a war veteran, you were trying to participate in the anti-war protests.
No, I began to understand and believe that the war was really, we were in the wrong place doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But, despite the dedication and the sacrifice my family made.
Right.
That's a big conflict to have to deal with.
It was huge. It's like, for me, there's a, the impact of that war on my family, it's just like very traumatic because of the sacrifice. Did it
put people at against each other?
Really difficult arguments. My mother would end up crying, and we had different views.
Mm-hmm. But it meant so much because you lost one of your family members to it.
Yeah. And nearly lost my brother-in-law. Lost him. But yeah, losing my brother. I was a big fan of my big brother.
Okay. Yeah. How old were you when?
I was 20 when he was killed.
So difficult. And then you joined right after? Or?
Before I was in when he was killed. I was on leave from boot camp when he was killed. At home, got the knock at the door.
That's a story. You write a whole book there.
Well, I started and stopped and started and stopped.
Well, I'm starting up my Stormy River Riders again, the winter probably in January. Yeah. So
the thought, yeah.
Bernice, I have a question for you, kind of a follow-up to what Sean just asked, but he had asked you specifically about local support and everything, the camaraderie, any challenges that you've had as far as getting back involved in the community or having a sense of community. But what differences do you see between when you got out in 69 and what kind of support you received versus maybe you didn't receive versus now?
You know, there's a lot more support. I think for me, I was living in Reno. I had a job in Reno for a number of years, and I began to volunteer at they have a wonderful VA hospital in Reno, and it began my opening to the vet community. Here in Astoria, it's been wonderful. I think there's a wonderful vet community. You know, the Shawns, right? It's just the really wonderful support for veterans and this little coffee clutch, and there have been breakfasts and things where there's a lot of support for veterans here. And the work that you two have done in terms of preventing suicide for veterans, because it's such a high rate. And and I think at the Vietnam War and veterans from that era, when I was trying to help with homelessness, helping people, the Vietnam era vets have a particular set of difficulties, I think, because of the way they were treated after the war, which shifted some, which I'm grateful. Still hard. There's no question that it's still difficult.
Well, I'm grateful to the Vietnam vets because of how we were treated when we came back. They made sure it wasn't going to happen again.
Yeah.
And because of that, I was one of the first ones to get sent back in this war back in 2004. And they really didn't know what to do, but like it was already kind of established, like, we're not doing this again.
Doing that again. No, yeah. And that's good. But it took a lot of pain for a lot of the vets, right? And working with vets, you know, kind of on the edges of not making it, right? Trying to find homes and shelter for people. It's like there's a suffering that they went through that was collective, right?
And right.
Thank goodness there were people that said, we're not doing that again. And there was regret from people and remorse for how the vets were treated. And so it helped. It's still not easy. Like the integration after being in a wartime setting back into, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, it helps me hearing your story because it's not the same. I was at war and didn't experience military sexual trauma. But from what I'm hearing, it's like some of the moments in your life that you're most proud of are the most painful moments. And it's really difficult to deal with that.
Isn't that how life is? Yeah. It's like it's from our pain that something is born.
Yeah.
Can be where your strength comes from sometimes.
Yeah. Like, what is it?
Not always, but.
And not always.
I always like to think of an elastic limit where you can bend a bar of metal so far. Uh-huh. And if you're under that elastic limit, it'll go right back.
Yeah.
But if you pass that point.
Break.
It'll break or it'll never go back to its original form.
It's the same like the line in the song about that's when your heart is broken, it has cracks, and that's where the light comes through.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of image. Your heart can expand and grow and have light coming through, but there are limits, right? As you know, working with suicide prevention, because it's like trying to keep people off that, that act, the final act of ending your life is like, I mean, that's, I think for me, one of the things that I came out of the Marine Corps with was PTSD. And I really wanted to kill myself for years and years. I had to fight so hard to not. I had kids and didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like having the VA acknowledge, wow, that they were part of the what created that for me. And I thank you for noticing.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Good. A lot of years later,
but it was the VSO. I think any veterans that hear this, the VSO, befriend your veteran service officer.
Yeah, absolutely. And here in Clatsop County, it's Carl Wiley.
Carl Wiley.
So helpful. I was just talking to him and he said, wow, should apply for this disability.
I'm glad. Too bad they don't give you back pay till when it happened.
I'll take it. That's all right. That's all right.
Well, we have a hall full of vets here, but we want to get to more. But I do have one more question for you.
That's right, yeah.
What do you wish more people understood about veterans in rural setting?
For me, it's like when I look at the sacrifice veterans make and their families make, I think it's not just one person that makes that sacrifice. It's like, and being in a rural area, it's like groups like this, because we need community. We really need community. And veterans, because there's a certain kind of sacrifice, a willingness to commit time and energy to something bigger than yourself, right? To protect the country or serve the country. That's what, for me, my family, it's like really because of our love for the country and our willingness to give our time and energy to support this democracy, as flawed as it may be.
Yeah.
And it's like the community coming back, and really, how do we find ways, especially in rural areas where everything's farther apart, services are less available. It's like to really, especially integrating after a wartime experience or a military service, because that reentry into society can be quite challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we learned everywhere. I mean, we drove over 4,000 miles around the state, and it's the same story.
Well, thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for talking with us today again.
Again. Yeah, look up. We should name these episodes at one point, but I guess it's just Bernice Moore.
It's episode. Called Bernice Moore. Yeah. That's the name of the episode.
And now we have more of Bernice Moore.
More. Sean and more and more.
More and more Sean. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernice.
As the editor, I had a choice. Cut some powerful moments or make this a two-part episode. I chose the latter. Today we heard from Sean Johnson, our newest team member, and Bernice Moore. Next month, we'll share more veteran stories. You can meet these voices in person at the Veterans Coffee Group Thursdays 9 to 11 at the Elks Lodge in Astoria. And mark your calendar. Our documentary premieres November 11th at the Liberty Theater. Details at roguecell.org. Thanks for listening to Rogue Cell Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Together with Veterans Northwest Oregon or the Oregon Firearm Safety Coalition or the Department of Veterans Affairs. You can find us at roguecell.vet or facebook.com/groups/roguecell. If you or a loved one is experiencing thoughts of suicide, help is available. Please call 988 and press 1 for veterans. This line is answered 24/7, so there is always someone to help. And with help comes hope, and hope saves lives. The second of the 503rd Rogue Cell is produced by Brad Peitzig with support from Together with Veterans and is hosted by Sean Davis. Thank you for joining us.